This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Love conquers all. Love will hold us together. We can get through anything as long as we have love. You've heard all these sayings before, biblical references. You've heard this before. We're about to talk about patriotism here, but what does all that love talk mean? We'll make it about a family before we go to America. Well, the idea of it is, you know, I have a wife, two kids. The idea is if we love each other, then that creates a foundation there that will allow us to weather whatever comes. What if I lose my job, flat broke, busted, or stuck in a crappy little apartment in the ghetto somewhere? Well, if we love each other, we'll get through it. If we hate each other, we're not. We're going to come apart. What if someone, maybe you're going through this or have gone through this, what if someone in the family gets sick, dies even? Brutal time, grieving, stress, strength. If love is there, you'll stay together, work through it together, because that's the foundation. And if the love's not there, you're just going to shatter into a million pieces. Countries work the exact same way. Patriotism is one of those things we love to talk about. We love to discuss it, especially on the right, because we are inherently patriotic. But what does it even mean? Let's go a little bit deeper and why it matters. Love of country. Love of country. And patriotism isn't something that, you know, a right-wing talking point, if you will. It is the essential element to hold a country together. The essential element. If you and I get together and we want to discuss issues, maybe we're discussing what laws we want passed, don't pass, what do we want banned, don't banned. You know what? We will disagree. Inevitably, we're going to disagree. You're going to have thoughts about this. I'm going to have thoughts about that. We will disagree. No question about it. No two people are alike. But if we share a love of America, if we're both coming at that from that place, then in the end, we're going to be okay. We will work it out, because I want America to succeed and you want America to succeed. Patriotism is the essential element for a country. I've used this example before just to kind of dumb it down, because it works this way no matter the size of anything. The 100-person village, some tiny, remote 100-person village in Africa, right? If there's 80, 90 people in that village and they love it, they feel blessed to be there, they love the protection that everything the village provides. Dad was here and grandma was here and I love my village. Well, how's that play out in daily life? If you're walking around and the water well everyone uses, you see there's a stone about to fall into it, what do? You run over there, you grab it, you get it off there. Make sure the well is good. This is best for my town. You walk by the cattle pen and the fence is falling down. Cattle are about to get out. You don't shrug your shoulders. You certainly don't make it worse. Oh, shoot, the cat. That's our cattle. You run, you fix the fence. But vice versa. What if you get to a place in your little village where half the people, they hate it? They've been taught the village is evil. Its history's evil. The village kind of sucks. Well, what happens when that person walks by the well when the rock's about to fall in? He runs over to it and kicks it in. What's that person do when the fence is falling apart? Tear it down more. Screw this village. That's how it works. And in the end, the village will collapse. It'll implode on itself. We here in the United States of America have a serious patriotism problem. And when I say serious patriotism problem, I mean it resides entirely on the left. America's Democrat Party today, not what your grandma voted for, today in the year 2025, hates the United States of America, and they hate it fairly openly. They don't really hide it. I remember all the conversations I used to have with communists who I know, who, you know, you remember after the St. George Floyd thing when they started singing the black national anthem at football games and Black Lives Matter and all that crap, and I would rant and rave about get the politics out of it, and they would say, their response almost every time was, it's always been political. We had the military there. What? Why would they view the military as being political? Because the military defends America. And for them, that's the opposition. They don't believe in defending America. They believe, well, I think Sonny summed it up best.
And so, yes, when I drive into a neighborhood and it's not July 4th and I'm not in a predominantly military household neighborhood and there are flags, American flags everywhere alongside Trump flags, alongside flags in a, with stars in a circle, I feel threatened because the message is very clear. It's a message of white supremacy. It's a message of racism. And it's a message of your, their country, not my country.
And there it is. I ran for Congress twice. You know that. And one of the most amazing things about it, anybody who's run for office, didn't have to be Congress, run for office or worked on a campaign, anybody who's knocked on doors, you go around town, knock on doors, hey, I'm Jesse, vote for me. Anybody in politics, they'll back up what I'm about to tell you. You see, you have homes and you can tell their voter registration. It was public, at least in Arizona at the time. You know, hey, there's two registered Republicans who live here, there's two registered Democrats who live there. And then there are homes that are unregistered, independent, not registered as anything at all. When you're running in a Republican primary, as I was, you're trying to figure out whether I should knock on that door. You don't want to knock on Democrat doors. It's a waste of time. You know what the ultimate guarantee was? If the home flies an American flag, it's not a Democrat. May not be a Republican, maybe libertarian, maybe not affiliated, but Democrats don't fly the American flag. Everyone knows it. Why? Why does Sonny cruise through a neighborhood and see American flags and feel threatened? Because for these people, America is the enemy. The enemy. They are at war with our own country. We are already in a soft civil war. And you notice she brought up race, because I'm actually glad she brought up race. I want to tell you something I've been talking to you a lot about lately. You see, race communism. Dividing up a country by race. These people are the good ones. They're the saints. These people are inherently evil. They should pay. They suck. Their history. Dividing up a country by race is the oldest and most effective form of communism. Did you know that? Mao used it to great effect during his Cultural Revolution. Hey, that tribe's evil and they've oppressed you. And they... It's unbelievably effective. Have you ever wondered why it's not just America, globally, leftists in every country, Canada, UK, wherever it may be, why they're so happy to publicly trash white people at every single turn. But of course, the saintly immigrant is always, you know, somebody worthy of the utmost consideration, not like you, whitey. Have you ever wondered? Have you ever wondered that? Well, let me explain. Because race communism is the most effective form of communism. When you take somebody and you tell them that person's inherently evil because of their skin color, and you're inherently good because of your skin color. For evil people, stupid people, that's like catnip. They just eat it up. Why do you think they responded like this after George Floyd died?
The killing of George Floyd was really just the boiling point. This is about centuries of systemic racism and racial inequality that has existed in this country. And I think what we are seeing right now is generational exhaustion and generational uprising.
And we know that we have been fighting systemic racism in this country for 400 years. We know that it has found its or reared its ugly heads in law enforcement agencies, in housing, in education, and too many other places.
Well, we need to have a systemic vision for dismantling systemic racism.
America has a long history of systemic racism. Black Americans, and black men in particular, have been treated throughout the course of our history as less than human.
Now, why is it so effective? And why do they love that term, systemic racism? Well, here's the thing. Not only is it appealing to the evil, violent, stupid people. Yeah, I am the good guy, and he is the bad guy. It's not just that. It's also that it goes to the very foundations of the country they're trying to burn down. This country, because it was founded by white people, and white people are evil, well, shouldn't we burn this place to the ground? After all, the whole system is bad. The whole system is racist. And that's their side of it. The other reason it's so effective is the people who have systemic racism pointed at them, the enemies of these vile little communists, they find it, unless you're strong enough, unless you're smart enough to see what's happening and bold enough to stand up to it, they cave. They cave all the time. It's very easy. Very easy to just shrink up and shrivel up. And I mean, I guess you're right. I am kind of evil. I mean, white people, we have done terrible things. And I'm very, very sorry about that. You saw it all the time after Floyd died.
Could I just have the privilege? I'd like to say a word to white churches. We are better than we used to be, but we are not as good as we ought to be, and that is not good enough. Which means you have to take up the work of racial justice. Racism did not start in our lifetimes, but racism can end in our lifetime.
Race communism wormed its way right into the church like that because the church was too weak and stupid to see what was happening. You remember the story of my own church that I lost, story I've told you many times before, actually during this time period. Right after George Floyd died, race communism chewed up my pastor and spit him out. Wonderful man, kind man, just very, very nice. You spend 10 minutes with him and you know he's got a good heart, a nice guy. And all that race communism all over the news, our pastor sends out an email to our church telling us he's getting ready to go to a What White People Need to Know conference. And I tried to warn him. I said, don't do this. You don't understand what you're dealing with here. Told me basically to sit back and he needs to go listen. And then stood up in front of the entire congregation and talked about white privilege that Sunday. Turned around, walked out, never went back. Good man as he may be, he's too weak and stupid to stand up to this. Be bold in the face of it. And this all comes back, to patriotism. You see, race communism is effective because it wrecks patriotism so easily. If you want young people to grow up and kick the stone into that well and tear down the fence into that village, all you need to do is teach them in school that America's an evil, racist place, and this place kind of deserves whatever bad happens to it. Those young people will grow up to be communist foot soldiers, and they'll tear down every well and fence. Patriotism is essential, and we must get back there. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk to Sean Parnell of the Pentagon next. Is there anything better than waking up in the morning and knowing you had a good night's sleep? Immediately you have set the tone for your day, your eyes open and you're thinking, oh, work's gonna be good today, school's gonna be good today, and vice versa. When it sucked, when that sleep sucked, you know it. That's why I wanna tell you about Dream Powder from Beam. One, I love hot chocolate because it's hot chocolate, okay? But you have it before bed. And you would never know it if I didn't tell you, but it has a bunch of natural things in it, like melatonin and reishi and all kinds of things, magnesium. And they just kind of relax you naturally. Again, drug-free, natural things. You go to sleep, and when you wake up, you don't feel like you took something to sleep. You just feel good every day. You want to feel like that every single day? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go. Enjoy the best night's sleep of your life.
We couldn't recruit. Now we're having the best results just about that we've ever had. What a tremendous turnaround. It's really a beautiful thing to see. People love our country again. It's very simple. They love our country and they love being in our military again.
They do. You look around and you see more patriotism now. You do. And I think there are a variety of reasons for this. A lot of this, honestly, you have to give a lot of credit to Trump and his leadership. He embraces that all the way. A lot of it, I do think, is a response as well to the left's hatred of America. And people don't want it. It's grades on them. Joining me now, a friend of mine, Happy to see him doing what he's doing. Hold on, I need to make sure I get this right. Chief Pentagon spokesman and assistant to SecDef for public affairs, my buddy Sean Parnell. Sean, it's not just in my mind, right? I look around and it feels better now, more patriotic, more love of country. It feels like that's acceptable again, if that sounds weird. Not that it ever went out of style for you.
Certainly didn't go out of style for either of us. I mean, it does feel to a certain extent like it's morning in America again. And Jesse, so much of this, I mean, you know how this is in the military. So much of a command climate stems from the very top. What are your priorities as a leader? If you live those priorities and you embody those priorities, they trickle down. And, you know, President Trump is a guy from the moment that he came down the golden escalator. He's a guy that loves this country. Everything that he does is because he loves this country. And he's got a guy in Secretary Hegseth now here who is the Secretary of Defense at the Pentagon, who loves his country. He makes it clear that he loves America in just about everything that he does. And he spends and dedicates a lot of his time engaging directly with the troops and boots on the ground. And look, Jesse, I mean, people see that. That mentality is contagious, and I think that's the reason. I mean, that's been the catalyst, I think, for the recruiting spike that we've seen over these last couple of months is the leadership that President Trump has the example that he set, along with that of Secretary Hegseth.
Yeah, organizations like the Army needed a little boost in recruiting. Sean, the Marine Corps didn't need that, though. What do you make of that?
You know, your question was about the Army. I think people want to know what the mission is, and if people want to know that the task that's set before us is to defend this country. And, you know, I think that when you talk about the mission specifically, and Secretary Hegseth has made that very clear, is that lethality is a core tenet of what we do, that readiness is a core tenet of what we do, and we're discarding things that to the ash heap of history, like diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know this as well as I do. It doesn't matter what God you worship, what color your skin is, where you come from, how much money you have in the bank. The only thing that matters is that you love this country and that you believe in the mission of the service that you serve as part of. And you unite beyond your many differences as Americans behind that common mission. And Americans on the battlefield can accomplish extraordinary things. You did that in Iraq. I did that in Afghanistan. And I think you're going to see Americans moving forward, united in purpose, doing great things, as long as we focus on those things that unite us instead of divide us.
No doubt. Speaking of SecDef Hegseth, here he was.
We are leaving wokeness and weakness behind. No more pronouns, no more climate change obsession, no more emergency vaccine mandates, no more dudes in dresses. We're done with that. We're focused on lethality, meritocracy, accountability, standards, and readiness.
Sean, just how much filth have you guys found as you've sifted through what they've done to our beloved military in the past 10 years?
A lot. I mean, the answer to that question straight up is a lot. Now, I'll get to that in a second. But I was with the secretary as he gave that speech, and what you didn't hear in that clip was how the crowd reacted. That was a speech that I believe the secretary gave at Special Operations Week down in Tampa. The crowd erupted with thunderous applause. And it wasn't just uniforms in that audience. It was their family members too. Americans, period, want to know that before their son or daughter joins the military, they're going to have the best leaders in the world laser focused on the mission. And you saw in that clip from Secretary Hegseth of him talking about that in very, very clear terms. And you could, I'm telling you, I go everywhere with this guy. There is an energy on the ground in the United States military that was not there before because of his clear vision of what service in the military should look like. So we talked about discarding diversity, equity, inclusion, but we're also we've completely revamped our national defense strategy to where we are focused on defending the homeland and securing our southern border, deterring China, and making sure that our allies are burden sharing. In other words, we've got to. There's a massive force posture shift that I think we're going to be undertaking here in the next few years, and a focus on Indo-PACOM. And it doesn't mean we're taking troops out of Europe or things like that. We're always evaluating force posture. But my point is, our allies have to step up and do their share so we can focus on the real threats that exist around the world in defending the homeland. And Secretary Hegseth has changed all of that for the better here in these last 3 months.
Sean, I need you to be honest. I know you're super focused on your duties there, but have you been able to shoot cool things and blow things up since you've taken over this post?
Not even a little bit. This is a big departure for me from what I used to do as an infantry guy. Spent most of my time in the trenches. I don't wear suits. I have to wear suits every day now. The first time I was in the freaking Pentagon was 3 months ago when I took this job. So, yes, it's been a little bit of a change. Haven't had the opportunity to shoot or blow anything up.
Have those guys get you a JDAM. You're with the Pentagon. Now, all right, setting that aside, I want to talk quickly about the Golden Dome. Here is Trump.
As we make a historic announcement about the Golden Dome Missile Defense Shield, that's something we want. And Ronald Reagan wanted it many years ago, but they didn't have the technology. But it's something we're going to have. We're going to have it at the highest level. Today, I'm pleased to announce that we have officially selected an architecture for this state-of-the-art system that will deploy next-generation technologies across the land, sea, and space, including space-based sensors and interceptors. This design for the Golden Dome will integrate with our existing defense capabilities and should be fully operational before the end of my term.
Sean, what is a Golden Dome? I thought somebody was making a statue of Kamala Harris.
Look, I'll just tell you this without getting into too much details because this program is super, super classified. But I'll just tell you this, Jesse. Thank God for President Trump and his thought process behind this system. And thank God for Secretary Hegseth, who really reoriented this building to put into motion a program that is called Golden Dome that will be operational, as you heard the president say, by the end of his term in 2028. I'll just say Democrats and Republicans should both parties should support this mission and this initiative because it's important, it's needed, and thank God for Secretary Hegseth and President Trump and their vision with this program because it's important. It's important.
I'm reading between the lines, Sean. I got you. Come back soon, my brother, as always. Go get
him. All right, see you, my friend.
All right. Jason Nelson has a lot to say. Used to be United States Army Special Operations. We're going to talk to him about patriotism, the lack of it, what's happened in this country. Next. I don't know that there's a more appropriate thing to talk about than pure talk as long as we're discussing patriotism here because you know what MACV-SOG is, right? MACV-SOG, that would be the group of Special Forces guys in Vietnam. They went and dropped them behind the lines. Highest casualty rate in Vietnam. They died in droves. Actually, the majority of them died. They dropped them behind the lines where they fought in the jungles. And the CEO of Pure Talk did two tours with MACV-SOG. How is there a mobile company, a cell phone company that's this patriotic? No Black Lives Matter crap, none of that communist filth. Pure Talk loves the country. It's in their bones, and they'll save you money. Keep your phone, keep your number, or get a new phone. They have that too, but switch to Pure Talk. It's easy, it's fast. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Switch today.
That's strong men do that. That has nothing to do with pride in the military. Strong men do that because they want to make their citizens cower. They want to say, we are strong. I am here. I have all these weapons. Aren't you proud of me? We don't need to do that. We know that our military is, you know, multiples the size of anybody else's military on the planet. We don't need them to bring the missiles down Pennsylvania Avenue in order for us to know
about,
that.
It's not about the size. In the last 4 years, morale in the military was down. Recruitment was down. There is a concerted effort going on right now at the Pentagon, and it's already successful, to enhance recruitment and to enhance pride and the idea of joining the military. I think you all are discounting the idea that a national parade for our military to show off our military, to show pride in the veterans that have defended this country, and you all are mad about
the veterans. He was just trying to rename Veterans Day.
I'm super proud of our military, but I don't think we should waste money.
Of course, we don't have to focus on all the noise. Remember, when communists are talking, communists are lying. We know why those people don't want a military parade. They hate the military. It's not about cost or anything else. They hate it. Why? Joining me now, retired Marine, United States Special Operations Command, Jason Nelson. Hey, Jason, why do these people hate the military so much? They always have. Why?
You know, Jesse, I think that to them it represents some sort of, it represents strength. It represents the ability to be able to defend yourself as a nation. It's what gives us the ability to self-determination, self-sufficiency. We as a nation have been called upon to defend the rest of the world, but in reality, we stand alone. We stand alone and have stood alone as a republic for many, many years. And that's part of the problem. When you're in a group that has been taught to hate your nation, to hate your skin color, to hate the things that you've stood for. I mean, for goodness sake, we have extended the lifespan of people through just for example, just preserving food in this nation, our ability to understand supply chains, the things that Henry Ford did, the things that we've done throughout our country that we should be proud in. They don't want to be proud of that. In particular, the strongest part of our nation is the military. It's not just the equipment. It's the 1% of the 1% that step up and make a decision to serve their nation, to wear a uniform, to sacrifice their lives, to sacrifice their futures in many instances, in my own instance, to sacrifice your personal health, to be able to stand and serve your nation. That's a representation of strength. It's what draws pride. Pride in seeing that strength, and seeing our ability. And that's everything that liberals hate about our nation. To them, it represents, I guess, colonialism or something of that nature. It's an extension of white supremacy. I don't know. But in the end, what I believe is that it shows what people should be proud of. It should be proud of the everyday Americans who stepped forward and made the decision to serve their nation. And again, this is the best of America, which just means it's going to be what Democrats hate, because they never ever want to celebrate greatness. They want to celebrate weakness.
Jason, our 250th birthday is next year, as most people know. And I think most people understand that Trump is probably going to be so unbelievably over the top and awesome about the whole thing because it's Trump and that's just kind of the way he is. I understand you had an idea about it.
You know, yeah, we've been working behind the scenes. So let me give a little background here. 39% of Americans in 2021, only 39% of Americans said they had some pride in our nation. Okay, only some pride in our nation. Everyone else, that's 61% of Americans, have no pride in our nation. At no point do they walk around and think, I'm proud of who we are. I think a lot of that stems from the fact that we've been told for so long, you know, we're just a compilation of flyover states and rednecks and hicks who all hate the rest of the world. And there really isn't any value in our culture, in our society. And I find that to be just untrue. I think the problem is we haven't begun to celebrate. We've lost the nerve to celebrate all the greatness. And funny enough is a lot of this greatness came from immigrants who came to this country, whether you're talking about the Transcontinental Railroad or the when you're going to talk about large families that have contributed to everything from the westward expansion up until the greatest generation. These were the things that the people who put in just the day after day's work to be able to highlight all of the strengths that come from all of the people in this country and what they've brought to it. And unfortunately, we've lost that. Remember, they only want to talk about where we failed, all of the things that we do that are horrible. You know, we've been working behind the scenes with the committee to sit here and find ways in which we could display what's happening, the beautiful things around this country. We'd like to see a state-by-state display done, and I can't really get into the details, but through actually a border wall that we're going to display within on the National Mall. So I think that when we look at what we've done, and I was asked, producer Grady said, what is it that you think very patriotic you've done? And I could point to being at a naturalization ceremony when I was downrange and escorting a young soldier as he became an American. That was a massive amount of pride in that. But I think about the things that I do in my own life. And for us, it's raising a large family. It's having five children and sitting here and saying, we're going to raise them to be great Americans. We're going to raise them to have pride, pride in their nation, but pride in their own abilities, and to teach them to stand on their own and be autonomous. And that's what makes a great nation, and showing them the great things about this nation. And I think that we need to start a new initiative to show school children and on up. We need a traveling, some sort of display that would sit here and give these kids a real insight into what this nation is, and not through the indoctrination that they've been experiencing through their education right now, which is just telling everyone the horrible things about us. Let's start to share the great things about this nation, because if we don't have national pride, we're never going to have people who are seeking to make this country stronger. We're only going to continue to have people who want to dismantle the great things about this nation. And I think it's going to take a lot of work, but we have a great opportunity right now with the 250th. To sit here and again highlight the history of this nation. It isn't political, it's just heritage.
No, it's not. Well, at least to us, it's not political. To the left, it certainly is. Jason, wrapping this up here, where do you begin with your own children? Like, where should parents begin? Because parents don't know, they don't have some blueprint laid out. You know, 250th aside, and parades and Independence Day aside. As a parent, when do you begin? How do you begin?
Well, so I wanted to look this up beforehand, and I wanted to find what keyword that people use when they sit here and they think of national pride. And one of the things that I found was the number one phrase that attached to that is gratitude, right? You need to have a gratitude. For us, when we started teaching our children, we homeschool, we started teaching them about how wonderful our nation is. We had to start with where the settlers came from, where those that were fleeing religious persecution came from, why they were leaving what amounted to what was just monarchs. And they wanted to leave that structure and have self-determination and have the ability to own things, to pass things down and build up within themselves, if they were to maintain that strength, to build something up for later generations that would be theirs and not owned by a monarch. So we started with the persecution, those who fled to this nation and why they wrote the Constitution the way they did. You know, we've passed through 1776 with our children. We're working through right now the first couple of presidential terms. But that said, one of the great things that we focused on was having to understand why you should have gratitude, the things that you couldn't have, the illegal search and seizure, the boarding of troops, the lack of the Second Amendment and the First Amendment, having them understand the baseline of why we needed those rights and guaranteed rights that were given to us by God, and how why we needed to cement that in writing, is probably one of the key things that we've thought has built some national pride, understanding what you don't have in other nations and why our nation needed to exist in the first place.
Amen. I love it. Semper Fi, my brother. Come back soon. All right. We're not done yet. Hang on. I love my watch. I've turned... Wasson Watch has ruined me. They've turned me into a watch guy. You know, I've never been that guy. I don't have the jewelry, things like that. Wasson watches are amazing. And I like wearing my values, too. I'll put it to you that way. This is a Marines company. A Marine, you know when I got my Wasson watch? I not only got this cool roll-up leather case in it, I got a Bible verse. What company does that? What company speaks out about the Second Amendment publicly, not privately, publicly? Publicly talking about the unborn. And we're talking about a high-quality Swiss watch here? You need a gift? Congratulations. WassonWatch.com, promo code Jesse. You need a watch for yourself? WassonWatch.com, promo code Jesse. I won't wear anything else now. I love these guys. And look, like I said, putting your money where your morals are. We have an opportunity right here. WassonWatch.com. Go get one.
Student was a guest in the United States on a student visa. No one's entitled to a student visa.
So you revoked her student visa based on an op-ed which trumps the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution.
Someone's coming up here to stir up problems on our campus. We're going to revoke their visa.
She didn't do any of that. She wrote an op-ed. Well, she wrote an op-ed, and I'm talking to you about her particular case.
That's her lawyer's claims and your claims. Those are not the facts.
You, reclaiming my time, you revoked her student visa because she wrote an op-ed. Would you revoke?
We're going to do more. We will revoke the visa of anyone who's in this country as a guest who's here to stir up trouble.
Are you
going to
revoke the visa of somebody who made that?
I mean, the case. I'll look at it. I'm looking to get crazy people out of our country.
Actually, it's not just about revoking. You actually, Secretary Rubio, excuse me, reclaiming my time. If these are legitimate law enforcement agents carrying out proper arrests, why are they hiding their identities?
Because then radical crazies will try to hurt them.
So,
I love that we're just deporting people. I love that we're grabbing people who are causing any trouble. And what amazes me is that this is all a shock because it's so different than what we've done. What a crazy, suicidal immigration policy we've had for so long. Joining me now, Mark Krikorian, wonderful executive director at the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, honestly, I cheer about a lot of this stuff, but it still makes me angry how many people, illegals, leftists, otherwise, they genuinely feel that every foreigner just has a right to come here and pillage the place at their leisure. They really genuinely believe this in their bones.
Yeah, they do believe that anyone, literally everybody has the right to come here, period. And that the First Amendment applies to every foreigner abroad and every foreigner who comes here, no matter what. It's crazy. And, you know, a visa is not an entitlement. As Secretary Rubio was saying there, you're a guest here. And when I go to another country, I'm a guest there. And if I conduct myself in a way that is inappropriate or is considered inappropriate by the people there, whether I think it's inappropriate or not, I lose my permission to be there. That's the way it is. It's the only reason we're seeing these complaints is that we have allowed things to get so bad that in changing them, in actually enforcing the rules, it seems like some kind of, you know, radical change, some kind of appalling procedure, when in fact it should just be business as usual.
Mark, how did this get here into our country? And I realize this is an old story. It didn't start with Joe Biden or Barack Obama or any of these things. How did we get to this place as a country where the world and half of our people just think everyone should get to come here because America kind of sucks? Did this start in the 50s, the 2000s? When did we get this mentality immigration-wise?
I can't point to a specific date, but clearly the 1960s and the whole Cultural Revolution that happened then is what resulted, is sort of blossomed into what we're seeing now. So if I had to pick a date, I don't know, 1968 maybe, that was a bad year for America all around, and you know, it's not like that right then is when things change, but that's kind of was the start of this you know, idea that America's bad, that borders are immoral, and that everyone in the world has the right to come here even if they badmouth us, because we're so bad anyway, so they should be badmouthing us.
Mark, obviously nothing's universal, so you shouldn't take it that way. Well, nobody should take it that way, but why is it so often the children of people who get to come here on a visa or refugee status turn into the most vile America haters in this country? Obviously, I'm thinking about people like Ilhan Omar and others, but this is a very, very common thing. Mom, dad came here, everything's okay. Son, daughter loses his mind. What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like you said, you don't want to exaggerate that. There's plenty of children of immigrants who are normal, patriotic Americans. But you see the same phenomenon, though, in England, in France, and elsewhere. And I think the difference is that the immigrant generation is coming here and comparing things to what it was like back in the old country. And it's obviously better. And so it's their children have gone through our terrible education system, become basically learned to hate America in a way that we didn't teach the children of immigrants or our own children, you know, 100 years ago. And some of them, some share of them, you know, figure, okay, that's the way it is, and so I'm going to hate America too. That's part of my being an American.
Maybe this whole Afrikaner thing, maybe it's been beneficial because it's been such a revealing moment, not just for how the media covers things, but for what's happening across the globe. Everyone remembers this moment with Trump and the president of South Africa.
I would say if there was Afrikaner farmer genocide, I can bet you these three gentlemen would not be here.
Turn the lights down and just put this on. It's right behind you. Now this is very bad. These are burial sites right here. Burial sites. Over 1,000 of white farmers, and those cars are lined up to pay love on a Sunday morning. Each one of those white things you see is a cross. Those people were all killed.
Have they told you where that is, Mr. President? No, I'd like to know where that is, because this I've never seen. But don't. Okay.
I mean, it's in South Africa.
The response to that by the media has been pretty revealing, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, Trump is a master of this kind of thing. I mean, you know, look, I don't think we should be resettling refugees at all, except in a handful of real emergency cases. And these guys don't qualify. And in fact, this program now has 70,000 people in South Africa who all want to move here. They're not Afrikaners. They're just anybody who's a racial minority. But that having been said, this really does expose the hypocrisy of the other side. And for that, you know, to that end, I'm not that worked up about it. It's a small number, and it has generated this almost crazed response. And in fact, one of the anti-borders groups, the Episcopal Church's refugee resettlement group, pulled out of the program rather than help resettle Afrikaner refugees. So I'd say overall, this was a kind of psyop that Trump did, and it's been a pretty successful one.
Is it just because they're white, Mark? Has it just come down to that? It's because they're white?
I think a lot of it, but even more that they're Afrikaner specifically, because it's a kind of blood libel that, you know, the Afrikaners were the ones who created apartheid, which hasn't existed for 30 plus years. But it doesn't matter, their descendants into the, you know, last generation have to bear the guilt, just as, you know, all Americans are supposed to be guilty of, you know, everything that people did 300 years ago here.
Mark, talk to me about these judges. What are we supposed to do about this? Because it's going to be 4 years of you can't deport these guys, you can't deport those guys. So are we just sunk? You can import 20 million people during Joe Biden's presidency, and when a Republican takes over, they allow you to deport about two?
Yeah, no, it is pretty unbelievable. And what I think, though, the administration is going to do is stick to its guns, keep working through the courts, because in the end, I'm pretty confident they're going to pull it off. But it's incredibly frustrating, and that's the goal, is to make the border a kind of ratchet so that a Democrat administration can let in anybody they want. And that was the claim of the Biden administration. They were allowed to admit anyone they wanted in any number they wanted by the millions, but that each one of them has to have endless due process before they're allowed to leave. It is ridiculous. I hope the judiciary is, in fact, at some point reined in by the Supreme Court. That's their job, because the alternative is worse. The alternative is we essentially have a kind of breakdown, and at some point, the administration is going to say, look, we couldn't care less. We're just, you know, they're just going to blow them off. Because, you know, what if a judge says, okay, Trump has to go around wearing a, you know, a funny hat on his head the rest of his life, and it's illegal, unconstitutional if he doesn't obey that rule? Well, at some point, judges are going to come up with rulings that cannot be complied with. I don't want that to happen. That's bad for the system, but it's the left-wing judiciary that is potentially forcing that crisis.
They sure are. Mark, as always, thank you, boss. All right, final thoughts next. Patriotism is essential, and that's, I mean, maybe the bad news when you look at where we are, but here's the good news. Patriotism can be taught. You just teach your kids about America, about its founding, about its history. You can teach the good and the bad. You don't have to lie about anything. But you do have to make sure they know how blessed they are to be here. Maybe that involves showing them videos, pictures of what it's like other places. Talk about history and how people have lived. If you can afford it, not everyone can, I realize that. Travel. Show people things. We had a church in our town. This is a few years ago. They did something I loved, something wonderful. They spent a bunch of money, spent a bunch of time, and they set up little shanties outside of the church that were exact replicas of how people lived in the poorest parts of the world. And you could go, and we brought our kids because I wanted them to see it. You could go and you could look. Hey, here's a little hut. That's just sheet metal on there. A family of eight lives there. You see that child? His only toy is a bucket. That's how other people live. Now look at how you live. Patriotism can be taught. Teach your children to be grateful to be here, and they will never become communists. All right? We'll do it again.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.